Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. I believe this one is episode 115. And recently, I was at my brother's new flat down in South London, and we were just catching up, having a chat, and so on. I decided that I would talk to him a little bit about music. It's one of our favourite subjects. And so in this episode, you will listen to an interview between my brother James and me, all about music, our musical memories, and also music that we've listened to and bought, and also music that we've played and recorded ourselves. Now, I've listened back to the conversation. It's definitely a very natural, authentic chat. We go off on various different tangents at some points. When you go off on a tangent, that means when the conversation goes in a different direction for a while before it comes back to the main topic of the conversation. So watch out for that. You might hear us going off on various tangents. But I have actually written down some phrases and sentences which we use in our conversation, and I have printed those on the website, which, as you definitely know, because it's completely burned into your memory, the website is, of course, teacherluke.podomatic.com, possibly teacherluke.wordpress.com, which is my blog page where I eventually post everything, all of the text and so on from teacherluke.podomatic.com ends up being transferred to teacherluke.wordpress.com just to save space. So if you go to teacherluke.wordpress.com and find episode 115, you should find a list of sentences and expressions, or at least a link which will take you to that list. And there you can basically sort of have a look at the words and expressions that we've used and just try your best to understand them. That might help you, might give you a bit of support when you are then listening to the episode and using it to learn English. The phrases and sentences are ones that I've chosen because, to be honest, it would take much, much too long for me to write a full transcript. Please feel free to add sort of parts of that as a transcript if you want. You can just send me an email with any parts that you've transcribed, luketeacher@hotmail.com. But I chose certain phrases and sentences because I thought they might contain bits of vocabulary that you don't already know. So go to the webpage, find episode 115, have a look at the phrases and expressions that I've written there. Otherwise, you can just sit back, have a cup of tea, and enjoy this episode of Luke's English Podcast, which is all about music. And here it is. Hello, and welcome to Luke's English Podcast. In this episode, I'm sitting in my brother's flat down in South London, and just decided that we would have a kind of chat about music, basically. So what's going to happen in this episode is that, first of all, I'm going to interview my brother, James. Hello, James.
Hello, all right?
Fine, thanks. I'm going to interview James about music in general. And then, once I've interviewed him, he's going to interview me about music. So what you're going to hear now is loads and loads of chat and conversation about music, and you will hear loads of vocabulary and different ways of describing music and talking about not only your musical taste, but also the act of playing, performing and recording music as well. So listen up, because you're going to hear lots of really good vocabulary in this episode. So hello, James, thanks for letting me come round to your flat.
That's all right, you're welcome, nice to see you.
It's very nice. I think it's really nice and cozy in here.
Good, thanks. That's how I'd like it to be.
And I see you've got a new carpet on the floor.
Yep.
It's lovely, really. It's very welcoming, very comfortable place to appreciate music. And I see you've set up your record decks over there.
That was the first thing I set up when I moved in, before I'd even got the kitchen sorted out. I had the decks in place.
So, okay, so you've got your record players.
Well, to be honest, I don't use them that much these days. I don't use them as much as I used to. Because you have to keep buying records, and obviously we're not all rich these days, so buying records comes a long third to like buying food and buying beer.
There's a credit crunch, basically.
Well, the thing is, though, yeah, I spend my money on bloody internet charges and stuff now instead, and I get my music that way most of the time.
Okay. Anyway, we've got all the facilities for playing music and stuff like that. So, James.
Yes.
James Thompson. Mm. James Richard Thompson.
This is your life.
This is your musical life.
Down, down, down.
So, let's
That's
see.
A TV programme.
Let's start. Let's,
in Britain, this is your life.
This is your life.
It's not on anymore, but yeah, it used to be like a famous celebrity would think they were going out for dinner.
Yeah.
They'd have all the best gear on. And.
Yeah.
Oh, Luke thinks something's buzzing.
Sure, there's just some turn sound off, problems.
Turn off the amp at the bottom, very bottom. Down there. Got it?
Yeah, I turned off the amp.
That should deal with the buzzing sound. Go on.
Luke, are you buzzing?
Well, there was a buzzing sound coming out of the speaker.
Sorry. Yeah. It's an old sort of muso joke, you know.
You're buzzing.
You're buzzing. No, I've only had half a lager.
Ah, right. Very good. So, James. James Thompson. James Richard Thompson.
Anyway, this is your life I was talking
this
about.
This is your life.
They think they're going out for dinner and then they get surprised that it's actually a sort of reception for them and they get a TV programme about them. It's quite funny. Quite 70s.
So I suppose what I'm going to do here is interview you about your life and your life with music. That's going to make a very loud noise on the recording. It's a can of beer. We're drinking beer again, ladies and gentlemen.
Kronenbourg 1664.
You've probably heard from the last episode.
If anyone from Kronenbourg is listening, you know, we're open to sponsorship deals.
Kronenbourg, yes, that's right. We're drinking Kronenbourg 1664. And so, obviously, other beers are available. you know, there are plenty of other lagers available.
There's loads. I've checked.
In the latest episode, the last one, you heard me with some of my friends drinking and talking. Well, we're doing it again, but, you know, it's all right. We've only had, like, a couple of ales, so we're fine. Let's see.
I think I'm fine to be in charge of a audio podcast.
I think we're both perfectly...
At the wheel, in control.
In control of this episode. Completely. We're on top of things.
Let's get to the subject matter.
Okay, so James Thompson, James Richard Thompson. Let's see, where did it all begin for you? Where did it all really begin? What's your first musical memory?
Are you serious? Okay, it would probably be... Probably the Beatles, I'd say.
Yeah, how?
Hearing them sort of coming out of these weird things, which I didn't even know were speakers.
Yeah.
And being very young and small and lying on a carpet somewhere in West London and hearing cosmic sounds coming through these boxes. Every now and then I think the mum and dad would turn it up quite loud. Not that often, but I think occasionally they did and we'd be like, whoa.
So this is how old were you when you remember listening to the Beatles like that?
Well, I know now that it was the Beatles. I mean,
yeah.
I think they also used to have that Jean-Michel Jarre record as well. Remember that?
We used to listen to Oxygen.
That's one of my earliest musical memories. Being impressed with music was that. You can put a YouTube link to it. It's a great...
Yeah.
It's a great piece of music.
It's really strange, though, isn't it? It's somehow... It captures something of the...
Dystopia of the future.
Yeah, or the bizarre kind of...
The soul of the machine.
Yeah, or the discovery of childhood.
Machines with soul. The discovery of childhood. Well, yeah, the
something
discovery
like
of self.
Anyway, the journey into self.
Let's stick to the music. Let's not get.
So you remember listening to Oxygen by Jean-Michel Jarre?
I think that's the one specific one I remember.
Okay, and
but that was fairly. When did that come out? Like
Oxygen was in the 70s, I believe, but Mum and Dad had a copy
that
of that.
Would have made me how old?
Probably would have been about two or three years old. Because you were born in 1975.
75.
So it was the late 70s. Disco, the disco era.
Mm.
So that and the Beatles were, are examples of music you remember hearing from Mum and Dad playing them. But
yes.
Did you listen to the radio?
Yep. As I got a bit older, yeah. I mean, when you first listen to the radio, you're kind of playing with it as a toy.
Yeah.
You know, and you're spinning through the dial, listening to different things that are coming out. You know, old analog radio, where you're manually dialing it.
You could, yeah.
And you find all sorts of weird stuff. You know, you find foreign radio, you'd find pirate radio, you'd find Radio 1, like the big, fat, loud signal of Radio 1, and then
BBC.
You'd move up and down the dial, move into long wave, and then you'd find some bloody shipping broadcasts, or
yeah.
And you'd find Radio 4. Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah.
And I listened to radio, used to listen, but the first, I was waiting for you to ask me the question.
Yeah, what was the first piece of music that you purchased yourself?
Oh, that I purchased my, that's a bit different, because I used to get them from the library.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, the first thing
What's the first piece of music that you went out and actually got yourself, either by buying it or borrowing it?
It was Madness.
Madness,
yeah.
Okay. Now, for the listeners...
I loved Madness.
The listeners, just to give you a little insight into who Madness were, many of you might know who they were, but basically they were a very, very popular band in the 80s in London and in the rest of the country. In fact, the whole country, they were really popular. And they started as a kind of sort of reggae ska band from London.
Yeah, ska band, a white sort of
two-tone
imitation ska band playing very fast, second generation
reggae music kind
sort of
thing.
Not reggae, like ska, kind of skinhead ska,
yeah.
But like friendly skinhead ska.
Yeah, and they had these great songs that had this real character and sense of humour about them, and they're full of energy and just originality and really, really good songs, really, really well written,
and they
really
cover,
well performed.
They cover sort of 60s ska tunes, but do them in a, well, the print, no, no, that was about Prince Buster, but they did One Step Beyond and...
Yeah, yeah.
What else did they do? I'm sure they did some covers.
That's
the Specials, though, isn't it?
Madness, they
the
did.
Specials.
They did the Prince Buster.
Oh,
the
Prince
Madness,
Buster,
Madness, they call it Madness. That one.
That was about it, though. But it was definitely very inspired
by
the 60s ska sound.
I think the Specials did more cover versions than Madness.
Yeah, they
in
definitely
fact,
did.
I prefer Madness to the Specials. A lot of people
different,
say the Specials are the best.
Different beast, really, aren't they?
For me, it's Madness. Just because they have a slight more... They have a kind of connection to music hall comedy or something that I like. Whereas the Specials take themselves a little bit too seriously and they do too many cover versions, as far as I
know. No, I don't know. I don't think you have to choose. I like
no.
both.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I mean, Madness also never made anything that sounded quite like Ghost Town.
Yeah.
I mean, as good as Madness were, they never made anything that really, like, sent a chill down your spine.
The thing about Madness were they were a little bit of a novelty act as well.
Well, they could be, but I think they were solid. I mean, they had albums and albums of really good material.
Yeah.
And really good songs that wouldn't even make it to singles, you know, really good album tracks.
Very well written
and
as well.
They were brilliant for kids, you know. You see them bouncing around on top of the Pops and and their videos were brilliant. Really, really exciting videos and really funny and... You know, you just wanted to sort of be like them, really.
Yeah.
Made music look like the best thing in the world, you know, the most fun you can imagine. Oh, yeah, this is buzzing away a bit. Sorry, I've got my Akai. Can I just play a bit then before I turn it off?
Okay. What Jim has got on the desk here, right next to the microphone, is an Akai MPC 2000 MIDI production centre, which is, if any of you know your stuff and you know, like, about the way in which... music like hip hop is made,
and some drum and bass,
and some drum and bass music. Then this is a piece of hardware which is one of the original sequencers and drum machines for
original, but one of the original.
Just one of the best. Like a lot of
90s
a lot of hip hop, American hip hop music from the 90s was made using an Akai MPC 2000. It's basically a sequencer and a sampler. You can kind of sample bits from other records and then assign them to different pads, and then you sequence all of those sounds by pressing the pads and then moving them around and stuff, and eventually you can make a track, like a whole piece of music where you've taken each sound from other records or other places. And it's really cool. You can come up with some really good bits of, like, instrumental hip-hop.
It's very compact.
It's very compact.
It, you know, fits in the size of a small briefcase. Well, a large briefcase, but
yeah.
It's portable and it's all self-contained. You just need a disc to save it onto.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a bit of a laugh, really. But anyway, we've got to turn it off because it's making a slight buzzing
noise. It's buzzing.
But just before we turn it off, should we play a bit?
Yeah, yeah. Jim's been working on a piece of music on this MPC for a while. And he's gonna play it. But I need to turn on the amp, don't I?
No, just put it off.
Okay, right. So
turn off the amp. Didn't you?
I turned off the amp, but I can turn it back on again. It was just making some loud buzzing. Right. So I've turned it on.
Okay, on.
Right. Can you test it? Because I think I might have turned the volume up. Describe it, but if you had to give it a genre, what kind of genre would it be?
Electronic music.
Okay,
I don't even know if that's right. I don't even know if it is electronic music.
Well, anyway, that's it. That's one of his tracks called Ambipure. You're okay. Going to play something else? No, that's it. Okay, that's all we're going to get for the time being. Okay, let's continue with the interview, shall we, Brother James?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a priest.
Do speak nice and clearly into the microphone there for the...
Yes, officer. Just sounded very police.
It sounded like an arrest, didn't it?
Please make sure you speak nice.
I do have to inform you that
you're under arrest for possession of an illegal podcast.
You are under arrest for possession of illegal podcast. Please just speak into the microphone here, thank you. Just to let you know, you do have the right to remain silent, but anything you do say will be taken down in evidence.
They don't say that anymore. They
used
say
in court against you.
No, they don't say that anymore.
What are they?
You're taken down and used in evidence against you. They've rephrased it. It says you have the right to remain silent. Anything you do say may be used in a court of law. Or something like that. They don't say using evidence against you because it sounds too negative, apparently.
Anything you do say, for some reason I feel like...
But it's more honest. The old way is more honest. It's true. Anything you say may be used against you.
Yes.
Which is what you've got to bear in mind.
Yeah. Well, just to inform
just
you...
Don't ever say anything.
Just...
till you get a lawyer.
Have you got experience of this?
Nope.
No.
I actually haven't, no. But no. I just know enough to know that that's...
We got listeners to this podcast who've listened to every episode will know that we actually got stopped by the police when we were kids for skateboarding in Birmingham. Remember that?
Yeah, crime of the century.
Crime of the century.
We're getting distracted.
We are getting distracted. Let's get back to the next level. So the first record that you... The next level, I don't know what I'm talking about. The next stage, the next part of the interview. Let's take it to the next level. Let's take it to the third degree or whatever.
Sounds like something out of an American movie.
Okay, we're gonna take it to the next level now. I'm going to ask you just a few choice questions regarding your musical tastes.
Okay, go on then.
What was the first music that really hit you as music, not as a kind of fun thing to like get into? When did you really sort of realise you had a taste, a sense of what was good music?
After Madness, that's quite a long time. I suppose the next obvious one would be The Happy Mondays, I think.
The Happy Mondays, okay. Yeah. So the Happy Mondays were a group from Manchester.
Yep.
In the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah.
Known as the Manchester scene.
Madchester scene,
which yeah. was characterised by a kind of psychedelic sensibility.
Yeah, and a sort slightly of 60s kind of throwback kind of vibe.
60s but. Influenced in a sort of Californian Summer of Love kind of way.
Yeah, but almost a slightly kind of a parody, jokey way. But the Mondays were more into Donovan, who was English.
Okay.
An English very hippie songwriter.
Yeah.
They wrote a song about Donovan, and they covered... They'd covered a Johnny Congo's song.
Yeah.
Which is a 60s kind of slightly groovy tune. And yeah. But they weren't a retro band at all. They were very, very modern. And they were basically a cross between sort of funk, punk, and a sort of weird...
Acid House.
Sort of Acid House soul kind of feel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They were brilliant. They were just, like, really good fun, obviously having a great time, making really, really bouncy party music that just felt really good and quite new as well, you know, quite distinctive sound. And he couldn't really sing, but it was just such powerful emotion and... it's just good vibes.
Really good lyrics.
Yeah, really cool lyrics.
The lead singer of Happy Mondays was called Sean Ryder, and although he couldn't sing very well...
He kind of could, though. It's a bit like Johnny Rotten. People say he couldn't sing.
Well, for me, it's a bit like Bob Dylan, you know, because Dylan didn't really have a great...
I hate Dylan. I hate Dylan's vocals.
Sean's more like, yeah. Fucking.
But, you might not like Dylan, but the fact is that Dylan was known for...
singing like this when he sang.
That's put on. Whereas I think Sean's lyrics were a lot more honest and really from the heart. And he didn't really have a traditional singing voice, but he really meant everything he said. He sounded like he meant everything he said.
Yeah. Okay, so Sean Ryder, the lead singer of the Happy Mondays, didn't really sing in tune, but he really did sort of mean what he said, and his lyrics were really good. So
yeah, some of the best lyrics going, basically. Yeah. He kind of took... Anyway, I'm talking about Johnny Rotten again, but it does remind me something of his wordplay. And the way he uses double meanings for words quite a lot. And then Sean does that, but sort of takes it a bit further and does more of them. And he sometimes uses a similar word in a different chorus and things like that. Yeah. Like, it sounds the same, but with a different meaning.
So some things are rhyming, some things are like little jokes, word jokes and things like that. It's good. That's one of the things I like about British music, to be honest, is the fact that there is some level of... There's something clever going on in the lyrics often, you know, things like it makes you think of John Lennon and his lyrics and, Sean Ryder.
I don't know if that's a purely British thing, but
no.
I don't know enough of foreign language to be able to judge that fairly, so I wouldn't know. There's certainly enough American guys, but they tend to do a bit more straight, though, don't they?
Yeah.
American singers, they tend to say what they mean, but we don't do anything but that, you know.
I think that perhaps the British... During the 60s and 70s, had a slightly, I had a slightly kind of ironic sense about them a bit. And in America, it was only a few people who had that kind of irony. Like people like, I think Bob Dylan did have it. I'm afraid so. He did, and someone like Neil Young, who at the same time as doing all that music, they were kind of making fun of the record industry and sort of not really going along with it. Anyway, yeah, we're getting distracted. Okay, so...
Happy Mondays.
Happy Mondays, so that was the early 90s. Okay, now when did you start playing music? Like, did you learn piano or guitar when you were a child?
We had a piano in the house, donated from, what's the word?
Inherited.
Inherited, sorry. Inherited from our grandmother when she died. But I couldn't play it. Luke could play it. He's brilliant. Well, he could have been really brilliant, but he's just good. Looks good at every musical instrument, annoyingly. But no, I didn't really pick up anything. I tried the piano, it didn't really appeal to me. Music lessons at school were horrible. Really almost got put off music by school because they were really unimaginative. You know, if you're given a bloody plastic recorder or a tambourine or something, that's the closest you'd get to a musical instrument.
Yeah.
So no, I tried learning the bass, not really much cop. I tried learning drums, and I kind of got somewhere with that, because that's the sort of last vestige of the guy that can't play music, they become drummers.
Yeah. In fact, there are lots of jokes about drummers. People say that the drummer is the least musical member of the band. It's not true, because there
normally the bass player is the least musical, I find. But
well, again, not true, because sometimes the best groups have got great bass players.
True.
The Beatles,
true.
All of the Motown records, Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay, tell us some drummer jokes then.
Okay, drummer jokes. What do you call a guy who hangs around with a group of musicians?
I don't know.
A drummer.
How do you know when there's a drummer at your door?
What?
How do you know when there's a drummer at your door?
How do you know when there's a drummer at your door? I don't know.
The knocking speeds up.
Right, very good.
How do you know when there's a drummer standing on your doorway?
How do you know when there's a drummer...
Why are you
repeating that? Because it's difficult to hear what you're saying.
Okay.
That's all. I'm repeating it so that my listeners can catch exactly what's being said. I know it's deeply, deeply annoying. But it just has to be done.
How do you know when a drummer's standing in your door?
I don't know.
He doesn't know when to come in.
Very good. Right.
Doesn't anyone will get that? Doesn't know when to come in means you don't know where in the song to come in. You don't know where to start in your part of the song.
I feel like we would have to devote an entire episode just to some choice jokes, which we would tell and then have to explain. And I know that destroys the joke, but I feel like to do an episode with jokes, we'd need to like really go into them in detail. It's something I intend to do in the future.
Haven't we done the drummer jokes before?
No, we haven't. We planned to do it, but we never did it.
I've got one last one. It's not about drummers, but it's a musician joke. Guy walks into a guitar shop. No. Can we
do it? Start again.
I think I want to scrap that one.
You don't want to do that joke?
I just kind of ruined it.
Okay.
Okay.
Guy walks into a guitar shop.
No,
you just screwed up that joke, didn't you?
Up,
okay. All right. Well, let's just move on. So, okay. So you didn't learn piano. You couldn't really play the bass with the guitar. And you ended up learning drums. And we were lucky because for Christmas one year, our parents bought us a used second-hand drum kit. And it was basic. It was just a bass drum, snare drum, hi-hat, tom-tom, floor tom, and a couple of cymbals. But it was all you needed, really, to start playing the drums. Dad had been a drummer in his youth, and he played in some great-sounding rock and roll groups, and they used to do covers of, like, The Who and things like that. It sounded brilliant.
He also wrote his own very sappy 60s music, which is absolutely brilliant. If you ever get a chance... Well, you're never going to get a chance to hear it, because he'd kill me if I put anything online, but it's... great.
Yeah, he did this sort of very cheesy music with an acoustic guitar, but to be fair,
it's really good.
And it's multi-tracked and all sorts of things. It's brilliant.
And the sounds. I sampled one of his tracks.
Yeah.
And I sampled two of his tracks, actually, and they both had really, really good guitar riffs and melodies and stuff. Yeah. It was brilliant. Yeah. Really impressive.
Okay, so you learned to play the drums, and I think at some point, maybe when you kind of became a fully fledged teenager, you discovered punk music, right?
As every good teenager should, yes.
Yeah. Now you've fully discovered punk music, you subscribed to it wholeheartedly.
Well, I didn't, you know, die of a heroin overdose or anything, so I didn't completely subscribe to it.
Okay, but I seem to remember you with, like, sort of ripped jeans, leather jacket, sort of punk-type gear. Not too full-on, but with the army boots and stuff like that.
I did eventually get to that level before I realised that was ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah, I
but
admit it.
You did...
I was young. We're all young once.
Yes, and I remember once you getting me to dye your hair, bleach your hair, because you wanted to look like Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols.
No, I didn't. I just wanted to look like a sort of American... Skeeter or something.
Or you wanted to look like an American skater or
maybe
something.
Keith Meek from Speed Freaks video or something like that.
So he wanted to bleach his hair, and so I bleached his hair in the bathroom, and we didn't leave the bleach in long enough. And so when he washed it all out, I swear he was ginger. It was like a carrot top. It was like
it was
like a Duracell battery. It was like one of the Weasley brothers from the Harry Potter movie. It was really red hair, and he looked hilarious. He looked really ridiculous. And, you know, to be fair to him, he left it like that.
I didn't.
Oh, you did?
It didn't, because Mum went and got some brown hair dye.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Mum got brown hair dye and he dyed it back.
It looked exactly the same. It was, you wouldn't know, honestly, the next day I dyed it back and it looks exactly the same.
Okay.
But in the months that followed, the dye eventually washed out, so I ended up with these kind of weird coloured...
It had highlights, basically.
Yeah.
But it kind of looked cool, actually, for a while. It was good. Okay, so you started playing, and you ended up in a band, didn't you, in college? A kind of punk band or two, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And I believe the first band... What was the name of the first band?
I don't think I really want to say.
Really? You don't want to say it?
I just joined this band in order to learn drums, and it works. They were called the Genital Fungi.
Right, Genital Fungi. Now, that's actually very rude, ladies and gentlemen. Very rude.
They were sort of a joke punk band, and they had just had two guitarists and no drummer, no bass player. So I thought I'd help them out, basically. And so I stepped in and played drums for them and basically learned to play drums. It's the best way to learn. Mm. Any kind of instruments to join a band, because you're forced to learn very quickly because you've got to go up on stage and do it. So I learned very, very quickly with those guys, and yeah, it was a joke band. It was quite a good laugh. People used to laugh and throw beer at us and stuff, and it was really stupid and immature, but it was good, you know, good way to start.
Yeah. Okay. And from that band, you moved on to join like a couple of other bands. One of them was called Grandpa Knuckles.
Yeah, that was another kind of comedy punk band, but that one was a bit more serious. They had two guitarists, a bass player, a mental singer called Eggy, who was just a lunatic, and it was...
Eggy, the lead singer, had a huge Mohican, like a massive Mohican haircut. He looked really cool. He looked brilliant. It was like a great punk band.
And the songs were actually quite heavy, and we used to do a really heavy death metal cover as well, because one of the guys was really into his death metal or whatever kind of metal it's called. And, yeah, we'd end on this really, really heavy number that we all learned really well, and it was really kicked in. I think it's called The End Complete... I can't remember who it's by. Can you?
No, I don't remember.
You could probably, if you put in The End Complete into YouTube, we'll find it.
Yeah, well, we'll have a look for it. Okay, so you played in this awesome punk band called Grandpa Knuckles, who were hilarious. And also, you set up another band called Amanda X.
Yeah, that was my sort of indie, sort of Sonic Youth type band. And I called Amanda X because that was a kind of middle class, Solihull revolutionary white girl called Amanda X, which is a fictional character that we made up that represented our sixth form college.
Yeah.
And we were a three-piece. We were very fucking cool. No one really liked us, but I quite enjoyed it, and it was cool. We had a girl bass player and singer, and we had a bloke on guitar and singer, and me on drums, and three pieces are really like a perfect way to run a band, because less people involved, less people to get organised, more creative input. It's just, if you ever make any money, you get more money. Mm-hmm. It's just perfect. Anyone who's ever wants to be in a band, just join a three piece. Everyone sings, everyone writes the songs, and everyone plays.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's very good.
It's the best formula for being in a, if you want to be in a new band, start three piece.
Yeah, in a new band, like a lot of the bands, like Green Day, for example, they're a three-piece, aren't they? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, okay, so...
It's just a good practical way to run a band.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
So you're in a kind of punk band and a kind of indie grunge kind of band.
Yeah, I suppose you could...
And did you ever write any songs?
Yeah, I wrote a few songs. They weren't very good, though. I wrote one called Vending Machine.
Which was about an ex-girlfriend, I believe.
A cutting riposte. Being shunned by a girl, and I compared her to the college vending machine.
Vending machine is obviously something that you put coins into, and then it gives you a little treat, a snack of some kind, maybe a chocolate bar or a drink. So that's a vending machine, and my brother wrote a song about a vending machine, comparing that to a girl that he had spent some time with, in a matter of speaking, and who didn't want to spend any time with him any longer, and so he expressed his feeling through the medium of song.
That's making a bit more out of it than it was, actually. I never even went out with her or anything. It's just...
I think she pissed me off for some reason. I think that's all it was.
Okay. All right. So, what then happened? Because I think then you got into electronic music, didn't you? Because it was after being into like all the rock and the grunge and all that punk stuff that you got into, well, there's two other kinds of music for me, electronic music and hip-hop. Which
and
one?
Rave.
And rave music. Well, that's electronic music.
Or jungle.
Yeah, well, okay, drum and bass, maybe. But basically, electronic dance music and hip-hop. Which one did you get into first after all the guitar-based stuff?
I probably always liked electronic music, the bits that I'd heard, ever since Oxygen. See, it goes all the way back, man.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
And I used to hear it on the radio, and I used to be at the Acid House. My mate came back from Ibiza in about 1988 with this tape, Acid House tape, and that was good. We used to listen to that kind of stuff. And then John Peel, who's all-time sort of musical legend,
a DJ, BBC DJ.
From who started in the 60s and carried on all the way through till 2000 or something. Mm. Excuse me. He used to play a lot of dance music, and just the more I heard, the more I got into it, the more you learn, because there was no internet back then. You didn't just type into Google and find out about it. You had to start buying magazines, talking to people, going to record shops. It wasn't just all laid out for you on YouTube.
Mm, mm.
You had to discover this stuff for yourself, you know. Yeah, yeah. And so I started getting into it, yeah. And I was into ambient music, sort of atmospheric, Aphex Twin type music. And I did get into a bit of jungle because I went to a sort of away for a weekend with a couple of mates, and two of us were into our kind of guitar-based music, and the other two guys were real ravers, real hardcore ravers at the time. And they were always going to these massive raves in God knows where, middle of nowhere, and they'd have these rave tapes on in their car all the time, and we'd listen to them and get really into them. That was around when the Prodigy was first coming out, Out of Space, and the Orb was massive, and so it was just everywhere around. There wasn't really much of a question of not being into it, because it was really good.
Okay, I think sort of after a while you sort of went to university, and then you got into DJing, right? You got sort of your first record decks, and you started to.
I didn't get any decks for years after that. I used to borrow other people's or use other people's decks.
Yeah.
So I never had any. Actually.
But eventually, you got your own decks, and you kind of learned how to DJ. And I believe you can scratch and all that kind of scratch, all that stuff.
I can beat match. That's the main thing. I'm quite good at beat matching. I can lay you out a good old jungle set if you want. Okay. Without any mistakes in it.
What do you mean by beat matching?
Well, you've got one track running, and then you drop in another track running at the same speed, match them up, mix them together.
So this is basically, you've got like two turntables. You play a song on one of the turntables, and on the other turntable you play the same song on another record. And not the same song. You get another song on the other record, and you play them together at the same speed, and then you can mix between.
I think they know what mixing records is.
Beat matching. They might not know what beat matching means, but it's basically mixing records.
Back in the day, we used to have to do it by hand, by ear. Rather than nowadays, honestly. Nowadays, you can get decks, these Serato and stuff. You've got a tune playing, you mix another tune in, you tap the button a few times and it finds the beat for you, locks in, and all you have to do is just mix the crossfader over.
Really?
And it does it all for you now.
Right, but in the old days you had to do it yourself by ear. Okay. And now, of course, finally, at the end, you're making your own electronic music on this MPC... 2000, this Akai piece of kit.
Yeah, I've been making music for years. I used to make it on Fruity Loops.
On a program on the PC.
It's a cheap, well, free, in fact, PC program. So I learned all of that, and samples, chopping up samples and rearranging them and stuff. Yeah. And then I bought this thing because it was quite cheap. It was like 250 quid, I think. And it's just more fun. It's more like playing an instrument because you've got these big rubber pads that you bash away and you can play it like a drum machine.
Yeah.
Like loose, you know, you just play it like a little drum pad.
Mm.
And then when you've got a feel for a track, then you can record it. And you're not staring at a computer screen moving a mouse around. It's just a tiny little track wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And everything else is more hands-on.
Right. Okay. Cool. Could you interview me now?
Okay. What was your first musical memory, Luke? He's thinking about it.
I'd have to say that it's I think it's the same as yours, basically. I remember crawling around on the floor as a child in Mum and Dad's living room in the house that we grew up in. I remember crawling around on the floor, it was a brown carpet, and from the speakers above, listening to the Beatles. I remember now, when I listen to Beatles records like Rubber Soul, that whole album, when I listen to that,
yeah,
it just reminds me completely of being in the living room as a four-year-old listening to the Beatles from the speakers above. And Mum and Dad had really good speakers, and so I remember clearly the sounds of Rubber Soul and the Beatles' voices as a child. So that's my first musical memory.
Nice one. So what was the first musical thing you sought out, bought or borrowed or purchased or whatever?
The first music that I actually sought out, let's see. I remember going to the library.
I was going to say, well, had an impact in some way, but...
Well, okay. Well, the first thing I got was from the library. I got these tapes of the Goons, the Goon Show.
That's not really music, though.
But they had music. They had the Ying Tong song. Yeah, and then also I borrowed Mum or Dad's like very old record player when I was about 7 years old, and I had it set up in my bedroom, like a really old-fashioned record player, and I used to listen to all their old records. So I'd have like Strawberry Fields Forever. I remember listening to that. They had it on a 7-inch. And also Genesis, for some reason. I was really into Invisible Touch by Genesis. I used to listen to that all the time.
I do remember Strawberry Fields as well, listening to that a lot.
Yeah.
And thinking, yeah. God, this is weird.
Yeah.
This just sounds like it's backwards or...
Yeah, it was very strange. But then the first music really to make an impact on me wasn't until... Well, actually, the first thing really was I used to listen to a track called... I bought a record. The first record I bought was Pump Up the Volume by Mars, which is an acid house classic.
And it pretty was cool.
I'm quite proud of that. And then the next record I bought was New Order and the England football team.
World in Motion,
which included John Barnes doing a rap.
That's a brilliant tune again. Actually, if you listen to that now, it is an absolute classic.
Yes, it's a really great...
And it's used as football as an analogy for life. So he goes, you know, you've got to hit them and hurt them, defend and attack. There's only one way to go around, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the whole song is all about life. You've got to dodge through and make it through. And yeah. It's really funny.
Yeah. And I remember having my little keyboard, and I would listen to that on the tape player, and I learned all the keyboard parts from that New Order song. And I used to play along with it.
So you could play piano?
Yeah, I learned
how...
I taught myself how to play all the keyboard parts. And then I decided, right, I want to learn how to play the piano. And I was about...
I think you'd already taught yourself by that point.
I was 11, and I said, right, I want to play the piano. And also, the other deciding factor in that was our next-door neighbour, a guy called Dan... And he used to play brilliant honky-tonk piano.
Like blues, really fast blues stuff.
Like Jerry Lee Lewis kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was
And
wicked.
It was brilliant. He was really good, and that totally fixed it for me. I really wanted to play. And I learned... I went to piano lessons with a teacher, and I learned classical piano. At the first, I didn't know what really I was doing, you know. But I just followed all his instructions, and I learned all these techniques and things. And then the first couple of years, I got distinctions in both of the first three exams I did. And then the other two exams, I got merits. But it trailed off because I got to about 15, 16 years old. And by that time, I was listening to Jimi Hendrix, the Buzzcocks, the Sex Pistols, the Police, the Jam... Madness and the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and some jazz music, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers and all that kind of thing. And I just thought, this classical music is just not for me. And in the end, I stopped doing it, stopped doing the lessons. But I quickly moved over to playing the bass and the drums. Because, as you said, we had that drum kit.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I used to play that drum kit for an hour every day. And eventually I sort of became a drummer, really.
And we had this double garage thing that was apart from the house, and it would become a sort of office slash
It was a garden house.
Well, yeah, but it was a garage, really, wasn't it?
It was. It used to be a garage, but Mum and Dad had it sort of...
Well, it was already been turned into this garden house.
It was a room, and we had carpet on the floor and stuff like that, and armchairs in there, and a drum kit and amplifiers.
We were lucky bastards.
We were really lucky, so we used to be able to practice our bands in there. What's your next question? Do you have one?
Yeah, next question. So you learned the piano, and you'd kind of got a bit bored of that. What was the first band you joined?
Okay, well, after I'd sort of, I was playing the bass, really, first.
Okay, so what made you pick up a bass?
What was it about the bass?
There was just one there, probably.
It was because someone, a kid at school, this is when I was 15, brought a bass into school and said, I want to sell this. And my mate, at the time, bought it.
Who's that?
That was Rick. Anyway, he bought it and he decided he couldn't play it, but I could. I could play it quite well, actually. And so he was like really pissed off. He's like, oh no, you should buy it because you can play it. And he got really annoyed and really pissed off. And so I bought it.
It is quite annoying watching you play musical instruments, though. I really can understand that. Yeah.
Well, in the end, I bought the bass, and you now have that bass. It's here.
That black one.
That black bass is the bass I'm talking about. Beast. So I bought that when I was 15.
It's massive.
It's massive.
But it's not
heavy.
Massive. It's just really heavy, and it's never sounded very good. But
no,
it's
got a good tone. Do you remember at band practice that one time when I borrowed it? And I was playing it. It had a great tone, playing songs like Teenage Kicks and things.
Was that recently? Is that with the new strings?
That was with that bass. Yeah. I don't know if it was new strings.
Well, yeah, my mate restrung it. And so you reckon it's actually pretty good?
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. So the first band I was in was at school in the music room because I was a music prefect at school. That means I had a kind of special responsibility over the...
I was the music prefect.
Yeah, I know. But I was responsible for the music room, right, which meant that I could play in there. I invited some of these cool guys from the school who could play guitar, and they came in, and one of them could play the drums. And so it was this guy on guitar and his mate on drums, and they were, like, properly dodgy kids from school who ended up getting arrested later on for doing some dodgy robbery or something. So, but one of them played guitar like Hendrix, and he was a big Hendrix fan.
Really?
Yeah,
like he was like Hendrix. That's a bold.
No, all right. He was like this sort of bully kind of kid at school.
What was his name?
I can't remember his name. It was too long ago. Mm. But he was a kind of bully kid. I remember kind of being vaguely scared of him. And then one day in French class, he was sitting next to me, and he was humming. Like this. Mm. And I was like, that's Jimi Hendrix. Mm. And I went to him, oh, Jimi Hendrix. And he was like, he did a double take. He sort of looked at me and then looked again. And he was like, how do you know Jimi Hendrix? Because I was a kind of boring, geeky kid who wasn't cool at all. Kind of really crap kind of 14-year-old. I was terrible. But I was there, I lived on my Walkman all day. When I was not in class, I would have the Walkman on. And I was listening to Jimi Hendrix and Cream and this kind of stuff. And so no one realised that I was into good music. And when I said to this guy, oh, that's Jimi Hendrix, he's like, wow, you know who Jimi Hendrix is? And I told him that I played bass guitar and all this kind of thing. And so we kind of started up this band. And it was him on guitar, his mate on drums, me on bass, and my other mate on bass as well. So there was two bassists.
Spinal Tap.
And we used to play Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix, and I played the bass line right, and my mate on the other bass played it wrong. So it was a complete disaster, because he had two bass players playing different things.
And that bass line is the one that goes... Ding, 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 ding,
ding,
For rock musicians.
Definitely. And then after that, I went to sixth form college and I joined a band that was like the coolest band in the world, basically. And that was a band called Skellington. And it was a kind of funk-punk band. Punk-funk. So
Skellington were brilliant.
It was the same guitarist who was in your band, Amanda X, was in Skellington.
Yeah, and, Richard.
and he used to play wah-wah guitar.
Good guitarist.
Yeah, and we had an extra funky bass player. He was the most talented one in the group. He could play really funky bass lines. And a great sort of keyboard player playing Hammond organ.
Is that the band you used to do that song called Kojak?
We used to do a song called Kojak.
And it was like a 70s whack-a-whack-a-whack-a-whack-a-whack-a-whack. And it was all about Kojak. Yeah. And your singer was a really kind of like stony, kind of hippie guy with long
Jim
hair.
Jim Morrison kind of.
Yeah, well, he reckoned.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant. Skellington were genuinely a good band.
Yeah.
Very sketchy, though.
We were really sketchy.
It sounded like a bunch of children playing funk music.
Yeah.
I imagine James Brown kind of funk music played by sort of children on Casio instruments.
Yeah, it was like that, but it had its own charm and its own style to it. And then since
and also,
then,
there's no good recordings. It's impossible to record something like that well without any money.
Yeah.
So there's no recordings of it really.
Yeah, that's right. I've got some bad tapes.
Yeah, you can't really capture it. When it was there live, it actually sounded pretty good because there's a lot of elements to it.
Yeah. Okay. So and then since then, I've been in like so many other bands. I was in a band in Liverpool. We played in the Cavern Club, where the Beatles played.
I played
drums on stage in the Cavern Club.
I played at the 100 Club.
Yeah.
The punk, but actually, I only DJed there. I didn't actually play my music instrument.
And I played in bands in Liverpool, and we got to the final of the National Battle of the Bands competition and all this kind of stuff. But the band, you know, we tried to get famous. We couldn't get famous.
Which band was that?
That was Orson. Not awesome, no. O-R-S.
As in Orson Welles.
Orson, like Orson Welles.
But it was named after a different Orson, obviously, just to be awkward.
I don't know. It was Orson from Morecambe Mindy, I think. Something like that. Anyway, and they were kind of bad, though, to be honest. And
I don't remember them at all. We
broke up.
It's one of those indie bands that tries to get really serious and they forget that, you know, they need to just write songs and have time.
Yeah, and then I joined loads of bands all over the place. I was in bands in Japan. I had I was on a song that was released in the shops in Japan.
What were they called?
That was Lure.
Lure, yeah.
Yeah, other things as well in Birmingham, played in bands. We got on TV in London, like cable TV or something.
Oh God, I was there.
Yeah, it was awful. That was
terrible.
Because in that band we had a backing track, and so I had to try and drum along to this backing track.
Never a good idea.
And if I couldn't hear it from speakers, then it was terrible, and I couldn't hear it. And we were on TV, and it all got out of sync, and it was a disaster. I had a nightmare. But what else? I've played in bands here in London. I played in that punk band that you used to be in called Salvo.
And yeah, we forgot about Salvo.
Yeah, we forgot about that. There's just loads and loads of bands, like Endless Projects and stuff.
Salvo were a really good, another three-piece, kick-ass, guitar-based.
Kind of an American
cross
punk.
Between Motorhead and Fugazi.
Yeah.
With a bit of Foo Fighters chucked in just to sort of soften the blow slightly.
Yes, I think so. Okay, well, I think that kind of covers our journey through music.
How long have we done?
We've done plenty. We've done 50 minutes. Do you want to sort of
rambling?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a nice little laid-back chat about music. Thank you, James, for joining me.
That's right. I hope that wasn't too boring.
I sincerely hope it wasn't too boring. Is there any way we can lighten it up at the end, before the end of the recording?
What's your funniest / worst live music experience? Or best? I don't know.
My worst or best live music experience? Okay, well, to be honest, I should probably tell you about the Cavern. I was playing drums on stage at the Cavern in Liverpool, which is obviously a famous venue for where the Beatles first sort of became famous in the UK. It's a legendary, iconic place. And I played there in the band on a Tuesday evening.
Rock and roll.
And there was no one there. Nobody was there. It's not a particularly nice place. When I went, anyway, it wasn't very nice. I remember walking into the place and immediately getting an overwhelming smell of urine from the toilets nearby. And in fact, between the songs, because there was hardly anyone in the building, you could actually hear the toilets while we weren't playing. So we'd stop playing and then you could hear in the background, and it was just miserable. And I learned later on that it wasn't even the original cavern. The original cavern got destroyed when they made a train tunnel through the area, and they rebuilt it in another place. So it's not even the original cavern after all. So it's completely meaningless after all of that. So that might be my worst live music experience. Other than that, it's just the fact that when I played in that other band in Birmingham, when we had a backing track, so they would our keyboard player would record a whole sequenced backing track for a song, which the whole band would then play along to with a bass player, keyboards, drums and vocals and guitar, and they would play over the top of this backing track, and I had to follow the backing track very closely.
But that means you've got two sets of drums.
Yeah, we had
a bad idea.
Yeah, we had samples of drums, and then I would play drums over the top, and it didn't really work. But I had to work really hard to play in time with all the samples, because you know the way they change kind of, you know, their beats and stuff, and also to just stay in time with it. So we tried it with a click track in my earphones when playing the drums, you know, click, click, click like that, but it wasn't loud enough, so I couldn't hear it. So they decided to put the backing track through my earphones, but that was like, I couldn't hear it at all. And then, so what we did was got a massive monitor speaker and just sat it next to me. So I'd be playing the drums and the monitor would be right next to me. And then during the gig, that monitor would blast the backing track into my ears from the side. It would just be absolutely blasting it into me so I could play along to it. And then, of course, it'd be the sound of the audience and the sound of the rest of the instruments. And after a while, I would be trying to keep time to what's basically white noise. Just... like that, and you're playing drums to that, you know, just thinking how I've no idea what I'm playing to. Just
your ears being damaged.
Yeah, and it's the sound of your ears being damaged. And after a gig,
that's why I gave up band practices, because I was going deaf.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, I had loads of problems with my ears, and I just stopped. I was like, I can't be arsed with this anymore. Going deaf. There's other ways to make music.
Mm.
You know, you don't have to sit in a tiny room and go deaf every week.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I think on that note, I think we should maybe stop here and maybe...
I've got a quick story to tell.
You've got a story to tell. Is this like a worst gig or best gig?
No, this is just a funny one.
Okay.
Okay, in Poland, with my friend Dave, who's... ex-Brit, now lives in Poland, and he's a teacher over there, English teacher.
Yeah.
So we went over there with him. This was a few years ago, before he was so settled down. He used to do a lot of DJing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and visited and took all my records over, and we did a few techno clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So we did one night, and then we drove all through the night to get to this other party on the other side of Poland. And on the way, we were driving, and this... along this sort of woodland area, and this massive thing ran out in front of us.
Like an animal.
And we hit the brakes, yeah, big animal. I thought it was a deer. And then my friend's going, it's a pig, it's a pig. And it was a massive wild boar, like ran out of the forest.
A wild pig.
A wild pig ran in front of the car. So that was on the way there. On the way there, we were like, blah, 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 what's the venue called? You know, it's like, we're going to play at like 3 a.m. or something, this big rave.
Mm.
He goes, oh, it's called the Slaughterhouse. This is when we're playing techno music, so we're like, oh, playing the techno Slaughterhouse, great. So we got there, it was literally a slaughterhouse. There was...
what is a slaughterhouse? What's an abattoir?
An abattoir, where they kill animals for food.
So they kill lots of animals, you know, at the same time.
It's like a big tiled, massive tiled room with, like, ceiling with hooks hanging off it and stuff. And, like, this huge, great room and a big DJ booth set up at the top. And just dry smoke, so much smoke you couldn't see anything. I played an hour of techno and an hour of drum and bass.
Wow.
And, no, maybe half an hour of it, I can't remember. But it was pretty full on.
Okay, well.
And you couldn't really see anything, but... Hello, is that a good enough story?
Yeah, it's the time that you...
I'm sure I normally tell that story a bit better than that.
No, it was the time that you DJ'd in a slaughterhouse, I think that's in Poland. I think that's a brilliant end to the story. Don't you, listeners? I'm sure you do. How many of you have gone to Poland and nearly hit a wild... pig in your car before DJing in a smoke-filled slaughterhouse somewhere in deepest, darkest Poland. I don't think any of you... I'd be surprised if any of the listeners have done that, James, to be honest.
OK, well, I'm very proud.
And how many of you, right, since I'm now onto this subject, how many of you have played drums on the stage at the fake Cavern Club in a urine-sink, stinking Liverpool?
Stop bigging yourself up.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks very much for listening. Please do check out the website where you may find various bits of information. Also, of course, you can see a selection of my videos there, and you can tweet about me there. You can find me on Facebook and all those things. James has got something else to say.
We were just talking about earlier, do you think Luke should get a more of a blog type thing? Have you got like a blog?
I've got a blog, yeah.
But do you think you should have, do you have subscriptions where you email people when you do a new update?
Well, yeah, it's possible to sort of
subscribe.
follow the podcast, but I don't get many followers. In a month I get
Do you have an email list to send emails out to?
An email list. Well, it's basically my RSS feed.
Oh, God, I don't even understand this stuff anymore.
It's my podcast page. If I want to send a message to everybody, I just post it on the podcast, and then I can Facebook it and all that sort of thing. But eventually, the plan is to put everything together, because at the moment I've got two sites. I've got Luke's English Podcast and Luke's English Blog.
Right.
And Luke's English Blog is a kind of way to try and present myself and the range of different things that I'm doing, including the podcast and various other little bits and pieces. There's a profile of me.
What's the other one? What's the difference? The other one
is Luke's,
the audio.
The other one is Luke's English Podcast, and that's really just a place for me to host the audio episodes of this. And it's arranged in a way to make it hopefully quite accessible. You've got videos.
No,
I'm just trying to explain. I'm just trying to explain what like the websites are, because it might be a bit, I don't know, difficult to understand where I'm going with it.
Maybe you should just have one.
Well, in the end, eventually, I want to have one which will involve more things like becoming a member and getting access to all sorts of different things. I've got loads of
free key rings.
Maybe. I was thinking about that. What would you think,
listeners? Mugs.
Mugs.
No, yeah. I'm just saying.
Mugs. What do you think, listeners, about the opportunity to buy sort of branded merchandise of Luke's English Podcast? Would you like to drink your tea or coffee out of a Luke's English Podcast cup? I think that you would. Would you maybe like to write some notes, vocabulary notes, onto a Luke's English Podcast specially designed pad using a Luke's English Podcast branded pen?
No, hell no.
No. Probably
no
not.
Way.
When you smoke, would you like to tap ash into a Luke's English Podcast ashtray?
That I might buy. You can't get good ashtrays these days.
Maybe I'll start doing Luke's English Podcast ashtrays. Just ashtrays. You know?
That's horrible.
Just focus on the ashtrays. Luke's English Podcast for the smooth smoking Ling English learner.
Got it. Energy drinks.
Luke's English Podcast
energy drink. Helps you learn English really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And then you can't get to sleep. Once the heart palpitations are finished, you'll learn really good English.
You get the sort of English anxiety, though, afterwards.
English anxiety podcast.
That's a good idea. English anxiety podcast. I'm here in English anxiety podcast, and I'm feeling very anxious. I'm in a car park, and it's getting a bit tricky. I can't find my car. I'm not sure if it may have been stolen or if I just don't remember where I park. No, there it is. There it is over there. It's okay. Now I'm just fumbling in my pockets. I'm a bit worried.
Okay,
yeah, that would be English Anxiety Podcast. I think I might do one of them.
Might be a feature in that.
Yeah, the English Anxiety Podcast. Okay, well, maybe you can find that in the future, listeners. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to email your thoughts. Leave your comments on the page. Add me on Facebook. Offer a little donation here and there. You know, it kind of helps me to pay the website fees for all this hosting.
And the pizza.
And the pizza as well. It helps to pay for the pizza too. Thanks again for listening. Bye, James.
Bye. Hope that wasn't rubbish.
let's just hope and pray that that wasn't rubbish and that somehow we can drag some level of dignity out of the burning ashes of this episode. Like a phoenix from the flames, we rise into the weekend, I think it's probably an appropriate way to end this podcast. Thanks again for listening. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Don't forget to visit teacherluke.podomatic.com for more information.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.